If you want to find Cherry Tree Lane, all you have to do is ask the policeman at the crossroads. He will push his helmet slightly to one side, scratch his head thoughtfully, and then he will point his huge white-gloved finger and say, "First you're right, second you're left, sharp right again, and you're there. Good morning." And sure enough, if you follow his directions exactly, you will be there, right in the middle of Cherry Tree Lane, where the houses run down one side and the park runs down the other, and the cherry trees go dancing right down the middle. If you were looking for number 17, and it is more than likely that you will be, for this book is all about that particular house, you will very soon find it. To begin with, it is the smallest house in the lane, and besides that, it is the only one that is rather dilapidated and needs a coat of paint. But Mr. Banks, who owns it, said to Mrs. Banks that she could have either a nice, clean, comfortable house or four children, but not both, for he couldn't afford it. And after Mrs. Banks had given the matter some consideration, she came to the conclusion that she would rather have Jane, who was the eldest, and Michael, who came next, and John and Barbara, who were twins, and came last of all. So it was settled, and that was how the Banks family came to live at number 17, with Mrs. Brill to cook for them, and Ellen to lay the tables, and Roberts and I to cut the lawn and clean the knives and polish the shoes, and, as Mr. Banks always said, to waste his time and my money. And, of course, besides these, there was Katie Nanner, who doesn't really deserve to come into the book at all, because at the time I am speaking of, she had just left number 17. "Without by your leave or a word of warning, and what am I to do?" said Mrs. Banks. "Advertise, my dear," said Mr. Banks, putting on his shoes. "And I wish Roberts and I would go without a word of warning, for he has again polished one boot and left the other untouched. I shall look very lopsided."
"That," said Mrs. Banks, "is not of the least importance. You haven't told me what I'm to do about Katie Nanner."
"I don't see how you can do anything about her since she has disappeared," replied Mr. Banks. "But if it were me, I should get somebody to put in the morning paper the news that Jane and Michael and John and Barbara Banks, to say nothing of their mother, require the best possible nanny at the lowest possible wage and at once. Then I should wait and watch for the nannies to queue up outside the front gate, and I should get very cross with them for holding up the traffic and making it necessary for me to give the policeman a shilling for putting him to so much trouble. Now I must be off. Whew! It's as cold as the North Pole. Which way is the wind blowing?"
And as he said that, Mr. Banks popped his head out of the window and looked down the lane to Admiral Boom's house at the corner. This was the grandest house in the lane. And the lane was very proud of it, because it was built exactly like a ship. There was a flagstaff in the garden, and on the roof was a gilt weathercock shaped like a telescope.
"Ha!" said Mr. Banks, drawing in his head very quickly. "Admiral's telescope says east wind. I thought as much. There is frost in my bones. I shall wear two overcoats."
And he kissed his wife absent-mindedly on one side of her nose and waved to the children and went away to the city. Now, the city was a place where Mr. Banks went every day, except Sundays, of course, and bank holidays. And while he was there, he sat on a large chair in front of a large desk and made money. All day long he worked, cutting out pennies and shillings and half-crowns and threepenny bits. And he brought them home with him in his little black bag. Sometimes he would give some to Jane and Michael for their money boxes. And when he couldn't spare any, he would say, "The bank is broken." And they would know he hadn't made much money that day. Well, Mr. Banks went off with his black bag, and Mrs. Banks went into the drawing room and sat there all day long writing letters to the papers and begging them to send some nannies to her at once as she was waiting. And upstairs in the nursery, Jane and Michael watched at the window and wondered who would come.